Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everyone. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are, boy, we're smack dab in the middle of our current book, Frentimacy, in our cafe book club, because we're going to be getting into some real good things like, you know, just as a teaser, the three practices for being your own best friend. That's enough to celebrate right there. Woohoo! Just getting going on that thing. So for anybody who's a newbie, we welcome you to the show and thank you for joining us. And we've been doing some different wonderful books in our book club, and we're doing Frentimacy by Shasta Nelson. Shasta was really great to go ahead and divide the book into three parts, and we're in part two. Actually, we're in part three. Are we in part three, Amy? Are we in part three?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Part three, because we're really looking at the gaps of things that would hinder us to being able to have deeper relationships, deeper friendships, and that's the reason why Shasta calls this Frentimacy, because it's really allowing yourself to go to just those deeper levels of commitment and connection.
Consistency.
Yeah, being consistent. Thank you. If you go back to the transformation-cafe.com with our regular website, all the shows are listed on there. And the last show, Andy did a really great job of putting the triangle that Shasta uses in the last couple chapters that we talked about. Being able to look at the power of the triangle and, you know, how that really works, because positivity is definitely something that's a part of having a frentimacy where things are being nurtured and really looked at in a very respectful way. And we're going to get into that tonight too, talking about leaning into intimacy and looking at self-worth and even looking into the fear of rejection. And boy, these can be really tough topics, but boy, she does a really good job of really walking through it in ways that you can understand it on a deeper level and see ways that really are give you lots of tools and perspectives that can help you to move out of some different belief systems that you've had that can help you to just move to a different reality with all these things. And I really want to share too that one thing I appreciate about the work is a few years ago, I wound up getting into a codependency with 12-step. And a lot of these things are things that you walk through with 12-step to really help you to just totally get a different language. And I really committed myself to being in that program for at least a couple of years, very, very dedicated to the, you know, weekly meetings and all that, because I knew that I needed to come into a new language, really just for myself. And I think, you know, we're talking tonight about really developing self-worth. And that really goes into some of the things that the 12-step is really all about. And we had done an episode where we worked with Jack Canfield and Dave Andrews about working from the 30 days to sobriety. And Amy, just real quick, you know, because Amy had went ahead and did that full 30-day program that they had put together. Are you seeing, since we kind of went from that book, and that was two different episodes that we went through with Amy kind of starting it and then where she was after she finished the whole thing. Do you see any of these those aspects of the 30-day? Because Shasta goes into talking about how, you know, friendship can be something that really could help somebody when it comes to being able to break the addictive cycle. So what were your impressions of being able to go through that book and now going through Frentimacy?
Well, think about it. If you step back and, you know, whether addiction to whatever it is, food or alcohol, pain meds, whatever it is, where does that come from? It comes from holes, right, that we're trying to fill. And not feeling connected to somebody, not having intimacy, not doubting your self-worth, and the fear of rejection, I think those are really significant holes that people are trying to medicate. And I think that's really significant. I spoke at a stroke survivor group last week, last Wednesday, and one of the things I talked about was intimacy, and people were really leaning into it. And I said, you know, it's really great that you're coming to your meetings and you're supporting each other and you're healing and going forward. And something to consider is how important friendship is in your surviving and hopefully even thriving. But at the beginning, we're going to be fast stepping here. So know that everything we talk about, there's a whole lot more behind it. So we're just going to look at each chapter for a matter of minutes. And looking at chapter 8 and leaning into intimacy, she starts off with talking about research from an article in on the Today News site. And it says, as the amount of negativity in relationships increase, women's risk of hypertension also increase. So I think it's not just for our sanity, but it really is for our health. And so it's a matter of how do I really take these skills and bring them into my life. I think we're sold now that we really need to do this, right? Or are you sold, Robin?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Totally done with that. You know,
and looking at page 126, I love this. And I think this really is a great way to look at friendship. That friendships are the gymnastics for the soul where we can practice the hard work of relationship. And she cites a bunch of, you know, different things like such as apologizing even when our friends don't, finding loving ways to say I need something different, and a whole list there. And one of my favorites is releasing our version of a story instead of looking for more evidence to back it up.
Yeah, she goes on to say, if our goal is to become people who make a difference in the world, then we are called upon to engage with each other and build our emotional muscle. I thought that was really great because it's talking about just these interpersonal exercises that we do. And, you know, friendships are really helping us to stretch and expand our soul in ways that we might have not even recognized. As everyone we're in relationship with can be a teacher for us, with an invitation to see our limits, our judgments, our fears, and our motivations. The more I can see where I am triggered, the more I can practice my internal work, creating greater emotional health for my life. Seeing our friendships as health clubs not only grows us as individuals, it also increases our chances of moving our friendship into greater intimacy and safety. We aren't likely to reach the peak of the friendship triangle without sweating through some of those times when it's been easier just to drift apart. And I really thought that was really great to talk about that. She said, to measure goodness by what we embrace, what we create, and what we include. And that's what this chapter is really about, is being able to, you know, you might have this challenging friendship where you've come to a place where you're kind of out of the honeymoon phase, and how are you going to be able to really work with each other to see how you can help each other to just lean into the relationship. And when you lean into a relationship, you're also leaning deeper into yourself. So again, you know, it's that thing about learning about yourself and how you can be able to deepen that. You know, I love how she talks about too, that friendships are sacred contracts. She says we need to renegotiate these unspoken commitments out loud so we can figure out what each person needs and preserve what we've built up. And I think that's really important to talk about, you know, what have I really learned from this person? What have they learned from me? And being able to really relish that, knowing that, you know, friends are the paths to our personal growth. Because like, there's nothing more sweet and just, you know, we had talked first that, you know, friendship actually means a safe harbor. So being in that place of having a safe place where you can go to be able to just be totally yourself. And, you know, say exactly what's on your mind and how you're feeling, and know that that person's just going to be able to just be there with you and not judging you, but really just kind of listening and supporting you on whatever level they can for helping you to be able to voice those things so you can walk through them. I think that's just such a great, great gift.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And having the courage to say, you know, in real relationships, there's going to be effort. And she talks about the four stages of relationship on page 130. But if you've done any team building, you know, you've also seen these areas, you know, the forming, the storming, the, you know, recalibrating. There's lots of different terms for them. But knowing that that's a normal part of any relationship, and to think that you're not going to get to a point where you're not rubbing. And people say, oh, we never fight. You know, we agree on everything. Someday somebody's just going to walk away. And I've just seen that happen one too many times in relationships. So knowing that that's part of relationship, and that's okay. And kind of tying this chapter together, because we need to move on to chapter 9, because I think doubting self-worth is a really big one. But I really like that she talks about we want to open space for questions, not shut it down with blame. And on 133, he talks about expressing love, validating feelings, removing blame, requesting willingness. So that's a really great process right there. So know that you have that. And when it's not working, that's on page 134. And there you have two outcomes. If she says it, while many relationships recover, even strengthened from both parties leaning in, but not every relationship grows deeper. So, okay, what if it doesn't grow deeper? You've got two choices. Are you willing to find peace with less? or do you need to craft a healthy closure? And they're the only one who can answer that is you. So I would really want to support people in really having the courage to answer that for themselves, not looking for telling their story from their point of view, because you're going to get the answer that you want from them if you, because you're the one that's just giving the information. So have the courage to say, all right, and some relationships, I have some of those that they aren't everything I want, but I accept them for what they are. And they're, but I have my needs met in other places.
And that's a good segue for chapter 9, because we're getting into doubting our self-worth and the fear that we're not good enough. And one of the things that comes up, you know, in this chapter is talking about that. Are you looking to other people to validate you, to give you the idea of what's acceptable or not acceptable? Are you really being able to embrace your own truth? Because she said, we can't enjoy intimacy if we don't like ourselves and we don't know ourselves. And, you know, back in, we did Presence by Amy Cuddy. We did almost a whole episode on the imposter syndrome. And that's a very interesting topic about, you know, how, and it seems to be more with women than men, but it's this whole thing of, you know, they might have multiple degrees and very capable, you know, people and all their skills, but yet they just feel like they're faking it. If somebody found me out, they wouldn't let me have this being a professor or something like that. So it's a really interesting phenomenon that we have when it comes to that. And there, you know, the bottom line with that is being able to practice extending love to ourselves and being willing to forgive ourselves into anything that might be what we consider something that's not acceptable to another person. So it's that whole thing about, you know, you have to stop shooting on yourself and saying, you know, if I did this or that, I would be better. So a lot of that's that self-doubt and that bullying conversations that we have with ourselves. I was on page 140. There's a book called Reform Your Inner Mean Girl. It's 7 steps to stop bullying yourself and start loving yourself. It's like 13 types of the inner mean girl. Boy, I was kind of shocked by that. But when I started really looking at it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I guess, you know, there's just all these ways that women will cut themselves down when looking at just how society and community would be, you know, not necessarily supporting us in ways that we can truly be who we are. If you're looking from the imposter phenomenon, it definitely makes sense. So what'd you get out of that, Amy?
Well, for me, it was really looking at the, you know, what is healthy self-worth for myself, right? And being really, you know, what does that look like? And I think that's why you got to get to know yourself. You got to, you know, make sense out of that. And on page 143, she talked about bragging roars with a need to intimidate, even with a bullying stance. Arrogance implies superiority and need to be above others. Honestly, I've met a few women who even came close to that. So the point here is that self-worth does not have to be narcissism. We pull back from feeling good about ourselves, thinking we might feel too good about ourselves. But if you're coming from a healthy perspective, I don't think that's possible. And I think that's where the mean girl stuff comes in, right? It's like trying to, oh no, you know, don't be a narcissist or whatever term you want to put to it. How do I keep humble? I think if you're coming from your heart and you've got a good best friend relationship with yourself, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, let's hope so. Going back to abandoning ourselves, I think Shasta had made a really great comment that really I wanted to make sure that we talked about was, many self-help experts insist others can't love you more than you love yourself. You have to love yourself before others can love you. She said, I don't agree with this statement. I believe it's possible for people to love you more than you can absorb. I also know that being loved by another can create the space for you to love yourself better. But at the end of the day, loving ourselves is an inside job. It doesn't have to start with you, but it's still your responsibility to do whatever you can do to know your own self-worth. Much of the way that someone else can't burn our own calories for us, we can't just wait to feel lovable only when someone chooses to tell us that we're lovable. And I think that's a really good thing to make sure that we're real clear on, you know, it is an inside job. And we continually talk about that show after show that, you know, when it comes to friendship, you got to be a friend to yourself before you can really be present with another. And just going back to the narcissism, we did an episode TC298 where we looked at narcissism as healthy narcissism. So that's something that's kind of an interesting topic that we kind of dance with. And Shasta goes on to talk about the bragging about that, you know, what it is and what it isn't. So, and she said, we're so afraid of the pretentious bravado that we're not even being brave. But while we might fear becoming conceited or vain, it's actually false arrogance that we should be afraid of, boasting because we don't feel worthy. A low self-worth can manifest as grandiose or a condemnation. Self-worth looks like peace. And I thought that was really good about self-worth looks like peace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a really great way that she put that together. So there's courageous actions here that she says, the three practices for being your own best friend. So Amy, we want to, what would you think about that? I thought that was really a great exercise for everybody.
Well, so the getting to know yourself, I really like that. And there's lots of ways they talk about Myers-Briggs, Strength Finder. There's a bunch of really great questions to take some time to really know yourself. Because if you don't know yourself, how are you connect to others? So there's a lot of mm-hmm. work that you can do with that, but know that that's available to you. Number two, know your value. And I love the quote on page 150,
flopping over into 151. Dr. Christine Northrup insists that learning to recognize our value must be the foundation of whatever healthy practices we adopt. And that, I think that is really amazing. That showing, you know, if you're living healthy physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, you're showing yourself how much you love yourself. And I think that you can do that through that.
Yeah, look in the mirror every morning and say, I really, really love you.
Well, more than that, not just look in the mirror, but look deep into your own eyes.
Right, exactly. I always think of, Louise Hay, because that's one thing Louise Hay is really wonderful at. She just really talks about being able to look at yourself and have conversations in the mirror with yourself. And that's a really great way of really, you know, cutting it quick about being able to be truthful with yourself when you're looking at yourself in the mirror. So that's a really, really great way of that, too. And you also talked about emotional intelligence. You want to talk about that a little bit, Amy?
Well, that's really the key to a really healthy person, you know, emotional intelligence. And it affects us in our health in so many ways. So practice three is know what you're feeling. And there's a lot of great questions on page 153. She cites us to a download a feeling inventory, because a lot of people... that I work with, what are you feeling? They don't really have any feeling words. They didn't grow up with them. So if you go to www.cnvc.org/training/feeling-inventory, that will give you a list of happy feelings and not so happy feelings. And hopefully we can get that link on the website there. And that would be really, really helpful. So that's really important to know what your own emotions are so you can share them with others.
One thing Amy has is a tool that I really love when she's doing presentations it's almost like a bookmarker that has all these different faces on it. And it goes from happy to all the way of, I don't know, is it totally pissed or despondent or something like that? And there's just different expressions on all the different little dots, you know, circles. And she really uses that for people just to be able to look at that and say, yeah, how do I really feel? You know, I could put a happy face out there, but that's not really subtly true for me. And that's not empowering for me when I'm not really there. So I think that that's really good. One thing Shasta says too in her Friendspirations is, my feelings are messengers of wisdom guiding me back to contentment. And I was like, wow, that was a really good, that's like one of those bumper stickers or putting that on the wall to remind yourself some days when you've got this certain day that's just really choosing to talk to you. It's like, what is the wisdom of this, of, you know, what I'm feeling right now? So I think that was a great thing because he talks about imperfection is more than okay. And I think that's one thing that, you know, when it comes to that sense of self-worth and, you know, who am I? Am I looking to the world to tell me what, you know, perfection is? Or can I see that that's just a very specific, inside job that's me and how that would look? So she says, choose to really get to know yourself more and more. And that means finding the language to describe how valuable you are, not judging yourself so harshly for your flaws, trusting that there is a part of you that is beautiful, lovable, and truly good, and becoming more comfortable with listening to your feelings instead of brushing them off, disparaging them, or ignoring them. And I, you know, we're just like going back to, you know, when it comes to addictions, you know, that's one way that, you know, we're all can be guilty of. You know, instead of really feeling this thing, I'm going to go numb it somehow. And I think that's a really great way of just being able to embrace what I'm feeling and know that that's okay. So, and having that again. And then moving into chapter 10, we're flying through this. But the fear of rejection, boy, this is a really great chapter. So I'd love Amy to really kind of Host this one, Amy. So go for it, Amy.
Well, you know, I think this is one of the things that, you know, destroys our, you know, self, certainly, but also destroys relationships. And I think I would love to see everybody, you know, look at this fear of rejection and these wonderful tools which we're going to walk through, because I think it destroys relationships at work and at home. And we make up all these stories about, you know, what is really going on in relationship and rejecting us. You know, he talks about, the gentle truth in 160, we can't enjoy intimacy if we don't feel like we belong. And he says, you know the feeling of doubt after you send an email to someone you admire and you don't hear back. And so then you start making up a story, right? That, oh, whatever, I'm not good enough, or they don't like me, or blah, blah, blah. And then she slides into a little down further in 161, regardless of the details, we can readily suffer from tribal shame, which can be devastating, paralyzing, and long-lasting.
No, there was a study that they had done in the Netherlands that I thought was just really kind of shocking, because it was a matter of people felt bad when they were left out, even though they were invited to do an activity that would harm them, and they still felt bad. I was like, what? So to me, that was kind of shocking, but it's that pain of it being excluded. Yeah, the exclusion pain. You know, I thought that was like, wow, that she says social separation, just as they do physical pain. In other words, our parents were wrong when they taught us that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm us. And boy, on any level, if you've had emotional pain and, you know, being betrayed or being, you know, excluded, that definitely is something that just, boy, it really goes to, you know, pains the soul, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, it's even that we've made up that we're excluded. You know, a lot of times we really aren't. But we've made up in our mind the story that we have then. So, these three practices for coping with rejection, I think, are really key. And I want to support each of you to really look at these and spend some time with them and put them into practice, you know, and of course in the workbook. She's going to challenge you and support you and going, how do I really make sense of these? So the first practice is retrain your brain to assume acceptance. Oh, what a concept. And so, you know, what you want to be looking at, if you don't hear back from somebody quickly as we'd like to or at all, we walk into a crowded party where we know no one, someone challenges our decisions. You know, are you willing to not, you know, get yourself all wild around the axle about it. And you start noticing, where am I triggered? She says, we'll want to look at exactly how these scenarios make us feel, not just rejected, but also it's a variety of cousins, slight and unimportant, dismissed, blah, 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 blah. And so I think you start looking at, you know, I love the Eleanor Roosevelt quote. It's one of my favorites. She says, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. And that's right. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter. I was talking to a good friend of mine at, you know, an event I was at tonight. And she was saying, her husband was saying, oh, you should, you know, tell people this or that, or what are they going to think? And, you know, like, who cares? You know, it's like, who cares what they think? Why do you have to defend yourself? You know, it didn't make any sense to me. I hope I convinced her that was a bunch of crazy, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. And you should have one page, page 167, when we recognize in the moment that we feel left out or shunned, instead of fighting, fleeing, or freezing, we went through a mental process something like this. Number one, compassion. Be gentle with yourself. Number two, reiterate your self-worth. Some parts of me knows that my value is stable in any interaction or circumstance, so I can choose to trust that. And then three, check in from a place of knowing I'm still valuable. I want to acknowledge that, and that I don't like how a friend treated me, but is she, of course, valuable too? But I'm going to assume that she said it was little to do with me and more to do with her. And then number four, make a decision. Is there anything I can do right now to increase the chances of both of us walking away feeling loved? So there's more to it than that, but that's, you know, there, that really gets you started and really thinking about, wow, how do I make sense of this? And so on page 169, There's a charting the situation that triggers your feelings of rejection. So what you'll do is you'll have situation, feeling, reactions, explanations, and then alternatives. So that could be a good assignment for you. And you can look at the workbook. You're going to have that there. And number two, retrain your brain to non-defensiveness. What a concept. So if you look, I love at the top of page 171 in that Course in Miracles, I highly recommend that if you have not done that. It's a daily practice. And I did it for a couple of years. And she talks about it at the top of page 171. She said, in a Course of Miracles, I gulped when I read, to defend is to attack.
What? She's got question marks and exclamation points at the same time.
Right. So have you ever thought of it like that?
I've done the Course in Miracles. I've done the workbook. So I've done the 365 day workbook. No, but yeah, but when I read that, I went, what? I did the same thing. I had the question marks and exclamation points going on. But when you really sit with it, when you think about, if I'm defending, I'm also creating a defense of ready for attack
right,
too. So it's just like, you know, it takes, yeah, it takes two, and you're standing up to basically, you know, put the gloves up and say game on, you know? Yeah.
Exactly. It comes so to it's whole. Like whenever I find myself arguing, justifying, or defending, I know my ego's in charge.
Yeah. And she's got a friendspiration on that same page. She says, I'm going to experiment with not taking anything personally. And boy, that goes back to the four agreements. I don't know. We've talked on that occasionally, on the show. And that's a really wonder. That's one of the agreements is that you really learn to not take anything personally. So that goes right along with the four agreements. So.
Absolutely. And then winding home here, practice three is retrain your brain to trust others. Uh-oh. What a concept. So to some, it feels like a conundrum. I have to risk rejection in order to feel acceptance. Much of the risk of rejection is an illusion. Tender self-care, increased self-awareness, and the practice of loving ourselves can help us to see that rejection isn't a scary beast we've been losing sleep over. So it's like, okay, all right. So somebody does something, whether it really is rejection or not, I get to choose. Am I going to let that affect me or not?
It's always our choice to be able to do that. So we've got about 30 seconds left. And there was a really great quote on there, too, that I wanted to make sure that we got on. It says, I will take more incremental risks because I want greater intimacy in my life. So it's just, you know, those baby steps of really being able to put our stuff in there. So she talks about Brené Brown and really working from her decades of all that. And if you go back to, we have one episode with Big Magic with Elizabeth Gilbert, where we had a session with Brené Brown. And if you go back to Big Magic with, it's called Magic Lessons that Elizabeth has, where there's a one in particular where she does an interview with Brené Brown about creativity. And it goes kind of into being courageous and looking at the way you can transform your life through different choices and stuff that you have. That I really encourage people to go back and look at that episode as well. So next week, we're going to be talking about toxic friend trends and the fear that they aren't good enough. And I think we're really getting into the gaps and looking at all this stuff. And boy, these chapters are so just really packed with so many great resources and information that I really want to tip my hat to Shasta. She's just done a really great job with that. So any last words, Amy, on these three chapters?
Really take the time this week to really go. We're going for the deep dive. We've got one more, group of us, work, the 11 to 13. Go for it. Go for it.
Yeah. And again, if you want to get the workbook and not familiar with that, go to Frentimacy, and that's FRIENTIMACY.com. And just go ahead and join up, and you get a free evaluation and also the free workbook. And it's, boy, she's just real generous in all the information that's there. So I want to thank everybody for joining us. As always, my lovely sister, Miss Amy, thank you for joining me as well. And we will see you next time here at the Transformation Cafe. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.